Hello, everybody, and welcome to podcast number 5, the Alexis Sale podcast. Now, if you remember last week, I was talking about somebody I used to work with who had died, a tour manager called Kenny Smith. And I was also talking about Kenny Smith that through a sequence of events, Kenny Smith ended up managing the band The Eurythmics. And one of the Eurythmics projects was that Dave Stewart had a studio in Crouch End where he lived and where Kenny Smith lived. And Bob Dylan used that studio to record in. And also another story I remembered was that I remember Bob Dylan saying at the time, there's a pub next door to Dave's studio. And Bob Dylan was thrilled because he was able to go into the pub next door and play darts, and nobody bothered him. What he didn't know about was the huge guy that Kenny had hired to stand at the end of the bar. And if anybody made a move towards Bob Dylan, the bloke would wag a finger and they would peel off. So that tells you several things, basically, what a fantastic tour manager and personal manager Kenny Smith was, and also that Bob Dylan lives in a world of lies. So another anecdote that I told, a famous anecdote that I told, was about because Bob Dylan was in Crouch End and he thought on his day off he'd go around to Dave's house and Dave Stewart's house and have a chat about something or other. He got the address wrong. He went to another house in Crouch End where a man called Dave coincidentally lived but was not in. So Bob Dylan knocks on the door. His wife, Dave's wife, answers the door. Bob Dylan says, And the woman says, well, Dave lives here, but he's not in at the moment. He'll be back from his job in the bakery or Tops Tiles. I don't know where we work. He'll be back in an hour. You can come in and wait if you want. So Bob Dylan comes into the modest little house, sits in the front room. And when Dave gets back from work at the police station or the abattoir, his wife says, Bob Dylan's in the front room waiting to see you. And that's as far as the anecdote goes, basically. Now, because Talal, who I record this podcast with, didn't quite understand the anecdote, I found myself telling it again. So I told the whole entire anecdote again, slightly changed, slightly modulated, different emphases and so on and so forth. And in the act of telling the anecdote twice, it got me thinking about the idea of repetition in art. And, of course, the most obvious example of repetition in art is Claude Monet's water lilies, that Claude Monet painted the water lilies in his garden in Giverny over 250 times. Now, these were the same objects that he was painting, but obviously there were fundamental changes. The light changed, the weather changed, I guess the water lilies grew and so on. So that's what that repetition was about. It was about seeing the same items, but minutely altered each time. And so it kind of gave you a kind of additional insight into the world, into the physical world. And that got me thinking, as I say, about repetition. And I thought, rather than me coming up with killer material every week or two for this podcast, what I could do was instead, I could tell the Dave Stewart anecdote over and over and over again. Obviously, it would minutely change each time. There'd be different emphases, I would say, different things, add in details, subtract other details. So that over time, I mean, what happens with repetition, I think, over time it would actually attain, it would be easier for me because I'm telling the same anecdote over and over again, don't have to think of new material. But also over time it would modulate. And to you, it would take on a kind of abstract form, I think, after a while. It would cease to have kind of conventional meaning in terms of language. And it would just be this sounds, really. And you might think about Bob Dylan, you might think about Dave Stewart, you might think about Kenny Smith, who's died, and you know, you might think about Crouch End, you might know Crouch End, you may have never been to Crouch End. So, you know, rather than the Alexis Sale podcast, it would, in a sense, become the Dave Stewart anecdote podcast. You know, it's an interesting idea, an idea that you can be reassured that I'm not going to pursue, but you know. Anyway, so this this got me thinking about ideas of repetition in art. And an anecdote in a way that I have is there's a piece of music called Jesus' Blood Never Failed Me Yet by the avant-garde composer Gavin Bryars. And what he did was he found a recording of a homeless man, an alcoholic, just saying this phrase, Jesus' blood, singing this phrase, really, Jesus' blood never failed me yet. And he was working, I think, in Leicester at the time, at the University of Avant-Garde Music or whatever, Department of Avant-Garde Music. And he took this phrase and he repeated it. He did a loop of it over and over again. And then he added in kind of orchestral music. And so a friend of mine years ago told me about this track. And I think it's a really interesting piece of music in a very unconventional way. So let's listen to a bit of Jesus' Blood Never Failed Me Yet by Gavin Bryars and Nameless Homeless Guy. Now, we're not going to play the whole track for copyright reasons, because also I think in even the initial version, even in the version, the kind of most vanilla version, it's half an hour long. But, you know, if you want, pause this podcast and then listen to it on Spotify or any other streaming service that you use, and then come back in and join us.
Blood never failed me yet, never failed me yet. Jesus' blood never failed me yet. This one thing I know, for he loves me so.
That was Jesus' Blood Never Failed Me Yet by Gavin Bryars and Nameless Homeless Guy. So amongst other, there's a version, amongst other things, there's a version where Tom Waits eventually comes in singing. And also Gavin Bryars did a 12-hour performance of that, I think with a live orchestra. And, you know, so it's a really interesting piece of music. Now, for a while, for many years, the only live performance I did was at book readings, because I stopped doing stand-up comedy in Perth in Western Australia in 1996, and I didn't really go back to it again until 2012. But I became an author. I became a writer and author, and the only live performances I would give them were book readings. Now, there were book readings organized by the publishers, and that would be lovely. You would travel first class with some lovely young publicist and stay in Malmaison and drink the finest wines known to humanity to give a book reading to 40 people at a Waterstones in Leeds, which was fine, although I was pushed to see what the business model was for that. But nevertheless, it was a lovely experience. What I also did was that I got on this kind of circuit, really. There was this guy who also died now called Graham Stansfield, and he used to book this kind of book reading circuit, and where you would go to civic, like art centres or council-run venues, often libraries, and these were often paid for by the local councils and stuff. And I would read my works, first of all, my collection of short stories, Barcelona Plates and the Dog Catcher, and then later on my novels, Overtaken, Mr. Roberts, and so on. So, yeah, for like, I don't know, 10, 15 years, I would, you know, do like 20 dates, 30 dates, traveling this rather kind of sad circuit. And sometimes it was fine. You know, like, you never knew how many people were going to be there. Sometimes it would be 400, sometimes it would be 40. It was good for my arrogance, really, that it taught me a lesson about just, you know, it didn't matter how many people had turned up, that it was your job to entertain them, really. And yeah, it was a weird kind of weird little circuit, which I think is probably, well, you know, obviously coronavirus, but I think it's probably vanished. I think those local art centres are having a pretty hard time. There was, you know, you'd be travelling around with like mostly Mozart or some bloke doing a one-man show where he would impersonate Dylan Thomas or somebody. And I remember there was an actress called Honor Blackman who used to travel around in her own Rolls Royce with the driver and would talk about her life playing. I think she was a Bond girl and so on and so forth. Anyway, I was on this circuit, and it was how I actually got back into doing stand-up comedy, because I would tell, you know, in the Q&A session, I would tell stories about my own life. And out of that came my whole new way of doing stand-up comedy. Anyway, but one of the things that they ask you when you're doing a book reading or indeed stand-up comedy performance is what music you would like played before you come on. And a lot of people have their own specific music that they use. I remember that Dawn and Jennifer French and Saunders would come on to Kinky Boots. And so I was never that bothered really about what music I had before me. But most people obviously choose something upbeat, something jolly. Anyway, one day they asked me what music I would like played before I did my book reading. And I thought, and this was, I had the CD with me, this was before you could just, before Spotify. I thought it'd be a really interesting idea, rather than upbeat, jolly music, you know, reggae or rap or whatever. I thought it'd be a good idea if I had for about 10, 15 minutes before I came on, if they played over the venue's PA system, Jesus Blood Never Failed Me Yet. And so that's what I did. 10, 15 minutes, I can't remember where it was, like Swindon or Gloucester or somewhere. The audience, waiting for me to come on and do this book reading, listened to Jesus Blood Never Failed Me Yet. And honest to God, when I came on, I never got them back. I lost that audience. That audience were in such a state of depression and introspection that no matter what I did, no matter how I capered, no matter how many interesting anecdotes, no matter how many funny voices, no matter how many grotesque faces I pulled, I never got them back.
Would you like some emails, Alexi?
Yes, please.
I'm so grateful. So many emails coming in. So I'm going to try and do some quick fire emails here and get through as many as possible.
Okay.
But just listeners, please, if the shorter they are, the better chance we have of reading them on air. If this is air, is this what this is?
I don't know what it is, really.
Okay. This is from Sadie.
Good moment.
All right, Alexi. Thanks for your show, and it's good to hear you doing this. I was brought up listening to you over the years because of my socialist, northern, working-class dad. As the years have gone by, whilst I've kept my very left-wing leanings, I often feel a bit disillusioned with a lack of representation of women in leadership, also the lack of openness to the idea with many socialist males in leadership. I mean, take a look at America. They've just swapped one aging middle-class white dude for another slightly less bad one. Hardly progress, is it? So, comrade, don't you think it's time for more women leaders? And how do we all make the conditions for this to happen? P.S. We did your bike ride route today, all the way from Brixton. Oh, they followed your route.
That's nice.
That's from Sadie.
Okay. Well, Sadie, yes, I absolutely agree with you 100%. I think that, women, it's been a very male, I mean, particularly kind of old-fashioned socialism and communism, Marxism, Leninism, that it was very male-orientated. All the leaders were male and, they didn't, it was a very kind of misogynistic atmosphere, I think, and that's one of the problems. And in a sense, you can see that, the Conservative Party's had two female leaders, the Labour Party has had none, and you have to say that there's something intrinsically chauvinistic, I think, about, the Labour Party. I'm not an expert on that. I think that there are some grounds for hope in the United States, is that particularly the squad, the younger, these four congresswomen, I think they are, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and the two other women. I don't know if I've got their names right. But they are much more attractive. They are the future of socialism, I think, certainly in the Democratic Party in the United States, particularly AOC, that they are both feisty, but they have also got really, interesting opinions. And yeah, I agree with your critique, though. That has always been a problem of the left in Britain, really. Is that it's chauvinistic. And, I guess the only way that you can change it is to get involved and, put your point of view forcibly and not put up with any male bullshit. I guess that is the general solution.
This is why we have so many backup emails, because it really is nice to hear full answers for each one. But I'm going to bunch a few together. We've had a bunch of emails asking about Young One stuff.
Yeah.
And we've had a few emails from listeners in New Zealand. So this is this show is spreading far and wide.
Yeah.
One that stood out is from Steve in New Zealand. Wanted to know about Bilowski. And is it true, a rumor he heard, that it's based on a real person? There was a landlord called Bilowski in Sheffield. Is that what it was based on?
No, I think I think Lisa did the character. It's a pun on. It's like Jerzy Bilowski. It's like a jersey and then a pullover. I think it's Jerzy Bilowski. It's like Jerzy pullover or something. I think that's the gag, if there is one, really. So no. But maybe we could do a Young Ones email in special. I'm always happy to talk about that show, really. So, you think that'd be a good idea?
I would love that. Right. Hey, this is a nice one to end on. It will round things off to where we started. This is from Simon. Simon in Glasgow. Dear Alexi, during lockdown, unable to get to the gym, I've started doing some weights in my basement. I like to listen to podcasts while working out. I've just dropped a 10-kilogram dumbbell on my testicles because I was laughing so hard and so helplessly at the whole Bob Dylan, Dave, Where Is Dave Now bit in episode 4 of your podcast. Even though I'm in crippling pain, I just wanted to let you know that it's absolute comic genius. Thank you. And also, my nads, Simon in Glasgow.
Thank you, Simon. I am happy that you're enjoying the podcast. I am sorry that you are in pain. But, that's life, isn't it, really? Laughter followed by pain, followed by more laughter, followed by toast. This has been the Alexi Sale podcast. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe and also leave us a review. That would be nice. This show was written by me and produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. The music was by Tarbush Records. I'd also like to say thanks to Anthony Overton for the sound mixing and to Audio Boom for hosting us. Also, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel, and then you can locate my bike ride. So what we're doing is we're alternating 1 week podcast and 1 week bike ride, if you want to tune into that as well. A more kind of slightly more meandering example of my psyche, then you'll get it on YouTube. All right, see you next time.